For the last decade and a half, I have been had the pleasure of working with Hal Poe, who at Union University is the Colson Professor of Faith and Culture at Union and a member of the ASA Executive Council, where this picture comes from. So, this presentation is an elaboration on our most recent book, God in the Cosmos, which was published this year by InterVarsity Press. Most biblical writers and Orthodox theologians through the ages have agreed that there is a Christian doctrine of purpose. Millard Erickson states that God has from all eternity planned what is to occur in history as carrying out his intentions. on the other hand, in many scientific writings, the words like purpose, direction, plan seem to only occur when we're being told that purpose, direction, plan aren't part of science. And this is a Dawkins quote, "The universe we observe has no design and no purpose." And we'll return to Richard a little later. The talk is really about me using the faith-learning integration model that was proposed by William Hasker in Christian Scholars Review in 1992 as a way to get at the meat of a science-faith intersection question and not be distracted by secondary issues. And he has 4 points to this integration model, which I've begun, started using in my research. And we'll look at each one of these points. The first point is the worldview foundations. In regard to an integration question, in this case purpose, what insights and convictions are come out of the Christian worldview? And from the creeds and systematic theology, we have a picture of God who is a creator, who prepared and sustained a pleasant world for humans, who created humans in the image of God. And so that's kind of the Christian meta-narrative, to use a postmodern term. And this world will end in the triumphal return of Christ as Lord of Lords and King of Kings. Okay. The second thing is to look at your discipline, in this case science in general rather than a particular discipline, and what foundational assumptions occur there. And current understanding is the universe has a beginning, space and time began with the Big Bang, that the universe, that science can function because the universe is knowable, understandable, and orderly. That's an assumption, obviously. And that humans are part of that process, part of the natural process. And then finally, methodological naturalism is the technique that we assume when we do science. It's not an ontological statement, but it's a method, and that all physical events have physical causes. The third thing that Hasker asks us to look at is what statements or issues that scientists have caused concern to Christians, and or if there's a question like purpose, how does the scientific answers to that question compart with the Christian faith? So now let's go through the scientific meta-narrative. I gave the biblical meta-narrative in number one. Now let's do a scientific meta-narrative. Here's one version of it. About 13.7 billion years ago, there was a simultaneous appearance of space and time, i.e. the Big Bang. And as that universe cooled and expanded, matter went through many changes, which I'm going to summarize as subatomic particles to atoms, to stars, to galaxies, to planets, to life. So that's 13.7 billion years right there. If we look at the life part of it, the Earth formed about 4.5 billion years ago. Life, or at least the first fossils, appear about 3.5 billion years ago. And so then we continue again through that time period, single cells, multiple cells, dinosaurs, and people. So that's, to me, those are the important parts. How well do the scientific and Christian meta-narratives relate? And this is a tricky area. Hasker advises using the words constants and dissonance when you talk about that rather than proof and disproof. And so areas of harmony between the two meta-narratives, obviously both have a beginning, the Big Bang or creation ex nihilo. and both end with humans, from different views, but at least with humans. There is dissonance. One of those, and we'll look at others as we go forward, methodological naturalism, this fact of using naturalistic explanations can lead to habits of only using naturalistic explanations, or can lead to conclusions like, I don't see any purpose in nature, to an ontological statement that there is no purpose at all, which is what Dawkins was doing. So is there a common ground? This could be a short talk. So let's look at the physical sciences. Steven Weinberger won the 1979 Nobel Prize in Physics for his work in unifying the weak force and the electromagnetic force. 2 years before that, in 1977, he wrote a book called The First 3 Minutes, which starts with the Big Bang and goes to 3 minutes after the Big Bang. And a lot happened in that time period. And at the end of that book, he moves from physics to metaphysics and makes this statement that although it's irresistible for us as humans to think we have a special position in the universe, the more we know the universe, the more it seems pointless. Is this a one data point out here, outlier, or do others agree with him? In the late 1980s, Lightman and Brouwer interviewed 27 leading astronomers, including Weinberg, about their childhood, kind of like what you were talking about. Did they have telescopes, etc.? And how they where they studied, what their research was about, and did they agree with Weinberg's conclusion? He still did. And so what did they answer? They consistently replied that the universe was pointless because it's just a physical process. Cause and effect, we don't see anything else. Okay. Although these physicists seem to conclude that there is no evidence for purpose, as our previous speaker spoke, there is certain fine-tuning in astronomical constants that seem to imply purpose to others. The fine-tuning arises from a purely methodological, naturalistic approach to science and not from a God of the gaps argument. And the issue is, if we could vary the size and the magnitude of physical constants such as the size of the Big Bang, size of fourth of gravity, size of the strong nuclear force, whatever, would the universe still have enough time and the right ingredients for life to appear? How fine-tuned are those values? And before people started doing this with computers, there was an assumption that it wasn't all that fine-tuned. And so there are 67 of these, depending on how you count them, that have been reported. I'm going to look at one in the interest of time, having the right atoms to give you an idea of how the argument goes. An atom, for those of you who took chemistry a long time ago, contains a nucleus with protons and neutrons surrounded by electrons. And, of course, it's a lot more complicated than that. All living organisms share 6 common elements: hydrogen, carbon, nitrogen, oxygen, phosphorus, and sulfur. Hydrogen has only protons. The most common form of hydrogen only has protons in its nucleus. All the others have both protons and neutrons. The strong nuclear force holds the protons and neutrons together in the nucleus. That's what binds them together. So what would happen if we made the strong nuclear force stronger, say by 0.3%? The strong nuclear force then becomes so strong that protons and neutrons are always bound together, and thus there can be no common form of hydrogen anymore. Suppose we decrease the strong nuclear force by 2%. Now protons and neutrons would not bind together, and we would only end up with hydrogen and no heavier elements. And so, by this argument, life as we know it could not exist unless the strong nuclear force is fine-tuned. So, the physical sciences seem to provide a common ground for discussion. Again, this is no proof, but a discussion with theology in regard to purpose because of fine-tuned findings that seem to point ultimately to life and then ultimately to humans. However, some evolutionary biologists seem to throw cold water on this common ground by denying purpose in the story of life. So maybe we can get purpose up to life, but not beyond it. So let's look at some biologists. Everyone's favorite biologist, Richard Dawkins, is a British evolutionary biologist who served from 1995 to 2008 as Oxford University's Professor of Public Understanding of Science. What a great title. What kind of public understanding did Dawkins promote? In his book, River Out of Eden, which was published in 1996, early in his professorship, he states that quote that you saw before, but I've added to it, the universe we observe has no purpose, no design, no evil, no good, nothing but blind, pitiless indifference. And he's not the only one. The late Stephen Jay Gould was at Harvard, and he is a famous popularizer of modern science through his natural history articles and books. One book that he wrote is called Wonderful Life. He has great titles for all of his books. In 1989, where he talks about the Cambrian explosion through looking at the Burgess Shale. And in that book, he popularizes the idea that evolution has no purpose because of contingency. The Burgess Shale contains fossils from what's called the Cambrian explosion, which occurred about 450 million years ago, where there was the rapid, in terms of geological time, appearance of the major phyla or body types. And so Gould's theme was that if we could rewind the tape of life, and he added that phrase to our vocabulary, back to the Cambrian and distributed the lottery tickets again at random, the contingency, then the history of animals would follow an entirely different path and we would not be here having this discussion. But some other intelligent creature would, but not maybe this discussion. One of the graduate students who did the actual field work was Simon Conway Morris, who continued to study the Burgess Shale fossils, as well as new fossils that were discovered in Greenland and China. And he changed, initially he agreed with Gould, but he changed his interpretation as he continued to study these fossils. In his book, The Crucible of Creation, The Burgess Shale and the Rise of Animals, he challenges the idea that contingency is such an important factor in the evolution of living organisms. So let's see why he did that. He says if we replay the tape of life, we will get similar lineages and properties evolving again. And he even includes that in one of his books about that humans must occur but because of these processes. Why does he think that? Something called convergence. Convergent evolution is where organisms acquire similar biological traits in similar environments but from unrelated lineages. So an example of that would be the saber teeth, wings, consciousness. So the lineages they're not from a common lineage, but a common environment. So, as an example of that, let's look at saber teeth. We are in California. The saber-toothed tiger, or as it's commonly called, saber-toothed cat, is the most common fossil found in the La Brea tar pits in Los Angeles. At the very same time, this placenta animal was roaming around in the northern hemisphere. In the same environment in the southern hemisphere, you had another saber-tooth animal. That's not really a cat, but similar environments, similar to solution to a problem. As Conway Moore says, similar environment, Similar environmental selection pressures can create convergence. Given certain environmental forces, life will shape itself to adapt. History is constrained. Not all things are possible. Perhaps there's a course in a direction to evolution. So, are there patterns or tendency in evolution that give it a predictive power? Believe it or not, NASA actually had a workshop on that in 2010 called Molecular Paleontology and Resurrection, Rewinding the Tape of Life. Love that title. One of the speakers at that talk was Lynn Rothschild, who's an evolutionary biologist. And she came up with what she thought were universal biological patterns that will shape life. And if we could understand those in great detail, then we could get some predictive power. The first universal biological pattern, according to her, is organic carbon. Life is going to be based on organic carbon. Why? Because it's found throughout interstellar space and can be a good, has unique chemical properties. Water is the likely solvent for life. Why? Because it widely occurs and it has such unique chemical properties. Laws of chemistry and physics are going to be universal. Principles of natural selection is going to be universal. The environment's going to do the selection. Solar or stellar radiation is a source of energy. And convergence is not only seen at the organism level, like our friend the saber-toothed tiger, but also at the molecular level. Molecules can converge. And at this conference, they actually had papers. She gave a paper on photosynthesis as a molecular convergence, why it's occurred at different points in the evolutionary process, and why we have 20 amino acids. All living organisms have 20 amino acids, while in nature there are 54 possibilities. But why only these 20? So to sum, probably can't see that, Conway Morris has returned purpose, or at least direction, to biology. The final point is the worldview contribution. Here, Hasker says we should ask a different question. What is science contributing to the Christian vision of reality? And so we've got to be careful here not to say this is how what our theology is going to be, which should be coming out of the book of the Word, but rather we're going to use our old friends Constance and Dissonance with these contributions. So let's look at some contributions that science has made. And we talked about one of these before. The universe has a beginning and still a constant between those, in that the theories of science and the doctrines of the church agree here that there should be a beginning. However, you should never forget that up until 1927, the accepted scientific theory was that the universe was static and eternal. And that is not constant. So, be careful with science. And I'm a chemist. There is dissonance even in the Big Bang theory. You look at one end, it looks great, but look at the other end. How's the universe going to end according to the Big Bang theory? One of them is the heat death of the universe, where everything just expands so far apart that all the lights go out and we just freeze to death, which does not agree with Christian eschatology. Another contribution that science has made, especially in the 20th century, is the idea of the unfolding or the development of physical and biological entities. And there's actually a consonance there between this idea and statements in Genesis about the earth bringing forth living organisms. And finally, purpose and direction is reflected through fine-tuning in the physical sciences and convergence in the biological sciences. And again, there is this consonance there. So, what is my conclusion from this? The Hasker model has turned out to be very useful for me to organize my thoughts because it has allowed me to focus on the primary issue and not get distracted by secondary issues. My primary issue was purpose, and there is constants that came out of the analysis, or at least my analysis. And finally, as we've heard many times today, humility is needed as much as technical expertise as we explore these questions at the interface of science and faith. So thank you very much, and any questions? Yes.
How much does the book God and the Cosmos that you guys wrote, it was just this last year you wrote?
It came out this year.
How much does that address the questions of purpose that you're talking about?
It does.
Good.
In several chapters.
Good
deal. Yes, sir.
A little hesitant to ask the question in the setting of a non-scientist, but I only point...
I want to talk about the universe continuing on. Then the Lord's, it'll end up with not even a earth that's habitable for humans or anybody. We'll end up with everything frozen at close to zero Kelvin.
But what that makes me think is that presumably that's a model.
Yes.
For how people assume the universe is going to end based on how it started.
Yes.
But why would you contradict the Christian's idea of the idea that at some point that we don't know, God intervenes and wraps
everything
up?
Why
would there need to be a dissonance?
Well, it seems to me that you're right. To me, there is a dissonance because the two solutions are not the same. There is a disharmony there.